I'm Sam Fuqua at KGNU's Denver studio with a panel of experts this morning to continue our series on childhood nutrition as part of Eat Your Radio, KGNU's ongoing look at kids and healthy eating. One thing we do know is when kids eat healthy, they do better in school and they reduce their risk of health problems later in life. Parents obviously play a critical role in determining what their kids eat, but schools and government also have great influence. And so today we're going to look at some of the nutrition policy issues here in Colorado with Cody Belsley, who is Vice President for Health Initiatives from the Colorado Children's Campaign. Catherine Moose is also with us in the studio. She's the Child Nutrition Program Manager with Hunger Free Colorado. And joining us by phone is Ann Bennett, Director of WIC and Nutrition Services with Tri-County Health, serving Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas counties. Welcome to you all. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Let's start by giving an overview of the need in Colorado. Cody Belsley, we were discussing before we went on air the rapidly growing rate of kids in poverty in Colorado. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, you know, Sam, we're seeing some disturbing trends in the growth of the number of children living in poverty in Colorado. Colorado is a great place to be a kid and to raise a family for many of us. But between 2000 and 2009, Colorado experienced the fastest growing rate of childhood poverty in the country. So it's important to note that we're still below the national average in terms of percentage of kids living in poverty, but our trend is headed the wrong way at an alarming rate. And if we don't take steps to intervene now, we're going to be living with the consequences of this for a long time.
Why is our rate growing so rapidly, child poverty?
You know, it's such a poverty is such a complex issue, and there's so many contributing factors to it. The availability of jobs across education levels is certainly a piece of it. Changing demographics is certainly a contributor. But it's hard, if not impossible, to pinpoint just one reason why.
And Ann Bennett from Tri-County Health, can you explain or give us an update on the current research that shows a definite connection between how well kids do in school and how well their health is later in life and the healthy eating they do as young people?
Well, in WIC, we really strive to feed the little ones so that when they get to school, they do much better. And national studies have shown that the kids who come out of WIC do much better in school in the years to come and have much less degrees of obesity and disease. So it really is a good way to give kids a good start before they start school.
And Ann, it sounds like you might be on a speakerphone. If there's a way for you to get on the phone handset, that'll sound a little better. Thanks very much.
Okay.
Can you tell us a little bit more about WIC for folks who don't know about the, I think that stands for Women and Infants and Children?
WIC stands for Women and Infants and Children, that is right, and it's a USDA program that is paid for by taxpayer dollars. It is meant to serve babies and moms who are pregnant, breastfeeding moms and children up to the age of five. And we are a supplemental food program, so we try to fill in the gaps where people don't have the nutrients they need in other products. So we really look at fiber, we look at fruits and vegetables, particularly vitamin C, and we provide calcium in milk. We try to provide protein and beans and peanut butter, cheese, that sort of thing. So it is for people that are at 185% of poverty, and people have to live in the county which WIC serves. So there are approximately 50 counties in Colorado that have WIC programs, and Tri-County happens to be the largest one. We serve about 30,000 women, infants, and children, and probably about half of those are children under the age of 4 or 5.
One statistic that's interesting to note is that between 2008 and 2009, total participation in WIC in Colorado increased over 9%, indicating really the impact of the economic recession and the needs that Colorado families and kids are facing in these difficult economic times.
And Catherine Moose from
One of the interesting things that people may not know is Douglas County is one of the more prosperous counties, and the WIC program in Douglas County increased 13%. And so we're seeing a lot more middle class and upper class people who are out of work applying for WIC.
Kevin Moose, I wanted to bring you into the conversation and ask you what role Hunger Free Colorado plays in serving some of the same families, I think, that the government program WIC is serving.
Sure. Well, and I wanted to add, just to support what Cody just said, that recent data from 2010 shows that nearly one in four families in Colorado is experiencing what's known as food hardship. That's families who answered yes to the question that in the last year they didn't have enough money to buy food. So that supports all of the research that's been done around child poverty, finding that it is affecting families and their food budgets.
25% of families serving?
Nearly 20%. So
20%.
At Hunger Free Colorado, what we aim to do is connect families to food resources such as WIC. WIC is doing such a terrific job at meeting the needs of women, infants, and children in Colorado. And there's a number of other programs, including the SNAP program, better known as food stamps, as well as the school meals, out-of-school programs like summer food, after-school, and child care nutrition programs. So we work on a number of levels, policy, outreach, and systems change to really make sure that these programs are robust in Colorado, they're efficient, and they're meeting the needs of families and children.
Are they?
Some of them better than others, to be frank. WIC is one of the sort of shining stars for Colorado in terms of caseload and meeting the needs. We have a lot of challenges in some of the other programs in terms of low participation. That's true for the SNAP food stamp program. There's low participation. Just around half of the folks who are eligible for the program are actually participating in Colorado. Similar to the school breakfast program and the summer food program, we see very low participation here in Colorado. We have seen increases, and we're very proud to say some of that is due to a greater need. Folks really getting connected to the resources that they need, and some of it's due to better systems, better efficiency, and more outreach.
Ann Bennett from Nutrition Services at Tri-County Health. Why is participation low? Let's take the SNAP program, food stamps. Explain a little bit about that program and why you think participation is quite low from what Catherine Moose just said.
Well, one of the reasons is that in Colorado, the system for applying for SNAP is really difficult. There are a lot of pages to go through, about over 20 pages in the form to apply for SNAP. And I think the caseload workers are just, there's so much of a burden that they can't often keep up. The computer system is also another problem just in getting people on the program. So we're actually leaving quite a bit of money on the table for SNAP. But possibly Hunger Free Colorado could give you a little bit more information on that one. I'm more familiar with WIC than I am with SNAP.
Well, why? Let me turn back then to Catherine Moose from Hunger Free Colorado. Why is it so hard to apply for SNAP in Colorado? And how to? It must be easier in other states, I'm guessing.
Well, what's interesting about the SNAP program is that it is a federally funded program, but it's state administered. So the state gets to make certain decisions around how they implement it and how they administer it. In Colorado, there are some things like the application, which is significantly longer than it is in some other states, and some other administrative pieces that make it more difficult. That being said, there is a lot of work going on currently to shorten the application and to streamline the process. And as Ann said, there's also a huge backlog in applications and caseloads. So a lot of folks on the county level who are certifying people for the program really can't keep up with the demand for the program. So there's a number of sort of pieces that need to get worked out. Another piece of it is that not everyone knows about the SNAP program. Not everybody realizes that they are, in fact, eligible. There's some recent changes that we're really proud of and worked on with the Children's Campaign to eliminate the asset test, meaning that folks that are eligible for the program now that weren't before because they had some modest savings, And that, I think, has really opened up the program to a lot of people who really needed it but couldn't get it because they had things like, a few thousand dollars in the bank. So this is something that I think we're still doing a lot of outreach and education around, letting people know that they might be eligible for the program.
One thing that I would just add to that, too, is that impacts of the Great Recession are such that families who have never needed to rely on safety net services before are finding themselves unemployed, struggling to make ends meet, struggling to provide those basic services and resources for their families, things as simple as food. And so you have a number of families who have never had to navigate the state safety net system before, don't know where their county benefit office is, don't know how to get connected. And so part of the good work that Hunger Free Colorado is doing is really a lot of outreach and education work to try to help to meet these families where they are in the community and help them understand the benefits that they're eligible for.
Where is the bar for food stamp eligibility? It's a higher bar than to get WIC, right? Like, what is the income test currently, Catherine Moose?
It's 130% of the poverty line. So it's actually families that are more low income than families that are eligible for WIC. And there's a number of other eligibility requirements that are different than for WIC. WIC is population based. Of course, you have to be a pregnant postpartum woman or an infant. SNAP is for all populations, but it is. There are more limitations in terms of who's eligible in terms of income and things like that.
One of the things that's important to note, too, is that all of these programs are – eligibility for these programs are determined by the federal poverty limit, which is about $22,000 a year for a family of four in Colorado. And many people believe that that federal poverty level is really insufficient, an insufficient measure of what it takes to support a family. So even at 130% of the federal poverty level or 185% of the federal poverty level, you know, these are very low-income families who are struggling and who qualify for these programs. There are a lot of families who are still struggling to make ends meet but are above these income thresholds and don't qualify for these programs, unfortunately. So hunger is one of these issues that is really affecting a broader swath of our population, more of our friends, family, and neighbors.
Do you think the income thresholds should be raised?
I think that the country needs to take a hard look at the federal poverty level determinations and consider whether or not that's really the best measure, whether you just increase the eligibility thresholds based on a flawed FPL system or whether we really need to revisit what that poverty standard looks like, I think is perhaps the more appropriate question. The federal poverty level was determined in the 1960s and took into account really monthly food costs because that was the primary cost for supporting a family at the time. It doesn't take into consideration costs like childcare, which are really, you know, necessary expenses to ensure a dual-income family in this day and age.
Catherine Moose, what kinds of foods can people buy if they get the food stamps, the SNAP program? Can they buy healthy food? Can they redeem it for organic produce, for example?
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And the SNAP program is redeemable at any food retailer that accepts SNAP, which is most places. And actually, you may have noticed when you swipe your credit card, there's a option for EBT, and that's what SNAP is, an electronic benefits transfer. So you can buy most food products at a supermarket or at a food retailer, with the exception of prepared foods. Those are excluded from the program because there's sort of an added cost of the preparation. But certainly produce, certainly there's no limit on organic produce. There's no sort of restrictions there.
Yeah, and that card is an improvement, I believe, because you used to have to present your food stamps. There's a stigma attached with that at the checkout counter, and now it's simply you swipe a card as if you were swiping a credit card, right?
Absolutely. I think the transition to EBT has been a terrific thing for the program, both in terms of client privacy and reducing stigma, also in terms of efficiency at the supermarket aisle. It used to take a long time to go through all those purchases. Now it's as easy as anything else. It's also really eliminated any type of fraud or any type of sort of misuse of the program because it is just like a credit card. It's very, very efficient. So we think it's a great thing.
You know, Sam, I think you raise an interesting point, which is the connection really between healthy eating and hunger, and what I think is sort of a counterintuitive connection between hunger and obesity. I think most people perceive that folks who are hungry are malnourished. They're, very skinny, very lean. But in reality, there's a high correlation between hunger and poverty because low-cost foods tend to be less nutritious foods. They tend to be more processed, have higher sodium content, higher fat content. And those healthy options that you talk about are oftentimes less available in low-income neighborhoods. And so that relationship between poverty, hunger, and obesity is very real. And unfortunately, the trends that you see in childhood poverty and in childhood hunger also extend to childhood obesity. According to the National Survey of Children's Health, Colorado has the second fastest growing rate of childhood overweight and obesity in the nation. Second only to Nevada. And so again, while we're tend to be a pretty healthy state, we tend to be a pretty lean state, particularly among our adult population, our trend is headed the wrong way among our kids. And again, if we don't take steps to address poverty, obesity, and hunger together in a comprehensive sort of way soon, we're going to see detrimental effects for our state in years to come.
That's Cody Belsley, Vice President for Health Initiatives at the Colorado Children's Campaign. Also with us in studio, Catherine Moos, Child Nutrition Program Manager with Hunger Free Colorado. And on the phone is Ann Bennett. She directs WIC and Nutrition Services with Tri-County Health. They serve Adams, Arapahoe, and Douglas counties. Ann Bennett, how do you address the obesity issue with your clientele?
It's probably one of the most difficult issues that we deal with. And one of the biggest things that has happened in WIC in the recent years is addition of fruits and vegetables to the food package, which has been very good. But at Tri-County Health Department, we have some really unique programs that we've been working with kids. And one of the things that was brought out really well earlier is that families really rely on foods that fill their tummies up and that are cheap and easy to come by. And so we work a lot with families to learn how to cook foods that are healthy yet will provide them staying power. So we've been doing some tasting cafes to have the families taste foods that are healthy and easy to prepare and use the WIC foods and some of the SNAP foods that they get so that they can have healthier meals. And a lot of the parents are very surprised to see a two-year-old eating broccoli raw, and that's been a really positive aspect. And of course, to go along with nutrition, we really try to work on physical activity. So one of the really exciting things that we've been doing at Tri-County is gardening, and we have five WIC gardens that the families go out and work in, and they get family time. The kids get to run around and play and learn how plants grow. And then at the end of the day, after they've worked in the garden, they get to take home fresh produce. So we are trying some innovative programs, and we're seeing some good results with families trying new foods and cooking more. I think that's one of the biggest problems when you've got parents that are working two and three low-paying jobs. Kids get shuttled from one place to the next, and to try and provide good quality foods is often a real challenge for the parent.
Just to take the time to cook a nutritious meal is hard to fit into the daily schedule.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we haven't talked yet about the school program, so I'd like to spend a few minutes on that. Catherine Moos, can you give us an overview of what's available in schools, both the breakfast and the lunch programs, and how that works?
Sure. Well, the vast majority of schools in Colorado participate in the National School Lunch Program, which is something that's been around since the 1940s, pretty much, and it's evolved over the years and provides lunch either free or at a reduced cost or for a full cost for families that don't, who aren't income eligible for subsidized meals. Most schools are participating in this program, and there's a lot of efforts going on to make sure that here in Colorado that the meals are as healthy as that they can be and cooked from scratch and a lot of great things. We also work on expanding access to the school breakfast program. Most schools that participate in school lunch also serve the school breakfast program, but we see much lower participation in school breakfast for a number of reasons. And we think that just like school lunch, it's really a vital program for low-income children. And countless studies show that it's linked to better performance in school, better test scores, better behavior, better attendance, less tardiness, lower risk of obesity and overweight for folks who, or for kids and adults actually, who eat breakfast. And we are excited to say that now, starting sort of in the fall, schools will be able to participate in an after-school meal program for those who do after-school enrichment programs. And that's something that is new. It came out of the child nutrition reauthorization that just passed last year. And we're thrilled. This was piloted in a number of states and is just new to Colorado. So those are some of the school programs. There's also some programs for the summertime.
So just to be clear about that one, the after-school, so if you have to stay after because your parents are still working, you have after-school enrichment, you can also get some kind of a sort of a between lunch and dinner kind of a snack or meal?
Yeah, for quite some time, schools and after-school programs have been able to serve a snack, and that's a terrific program to participate in. But just now, through the new law, they're able to provide a meal, which is actually quite similar to the lunch. It consists of what are known as five components in the nutrition world, so protein, grains, milk, and fruits and vegetables. And this is for programs that really stay open later. We know that in Colorado, the Boys and Girls Club, for example, stays open till 9 p.m. So what are the, I mean, those kids are going to need a meal before 9 p.m. before their parents pick them up. So we're thrilled. We think this is a great nutrition program and really a great support for low-income working families.
We're talking about child nutrition programs and policy in the state of Colorado this morning. It's listener-supported KGNU Boulder, Denver, 88.5 FM, 1390 AM. And online at kgnu.org. It's a couple minutes before 9 o'clock. That's Catherine Moos, whom you just heard. She's with Hunger Free Colorado. Cody Belsley from the Colorado Children's Campaign is with us, and on the phone, Ann Bennett from Tri-County Health. We invite your questions and comments at 303-442-4242. That's 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join the conversation. If you have experience with one of these nutrition programs or you have a question or a comment for our panel, please call 303-442-4242. What are the summer programs now? School is out, but kids are still able to get a healthy meal at some area public schools. Can you explain that, Catherine Moos?
Sure. So the Summer Food Service Program is also a federally funded nutrition program for kids, and it operates a little bit differently than the school meal programs in that it's open both to schools, community-based organizations, and local governments. So what we see here in Colorado, we've got this year over 350 summer food sites, the majority of which are in schools, but a number of them are also in churches, community centers, summer camps, places like that. And what's great about this program is that it's open to any child. They don't have to be enrolled in the school that's serving the meals because there's greater flexibility. So as long as the neighborhood qualifies as low income, meaning that 50% or more of the child population is qualified for free or reduced meals, then any child can eat. And that's really streamlines the program and increases access. So it's going on currently all over the state. And we actually have a website where you can search. It's summerfoodcolorado.org. You can put in your zip code or your town and find out where the summer food sites are. You can also call our office talk to hotline navigators who will direct you to the nearest summer food site.
And if you internet search on Hunger Free Colorado, you'll be able to find their site. And we'll give some phone numbers at the end of the program as well. Cody Belsley from the Colorado Children's Campaign. Catherine Moos alluded to the Child Nutrition Act. The recent reauthorization is also called the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act of 2010. What does that mean for Colorado kids? And can you give us an overview of what's in that legislation?
Absolutely, Sam. This was passed in December of 2010 and was a really historic and important step forward in improving access to food subsidy programs, but also improving the quality of those programs and implementing nutrition standards for a lot of the summer meal programs. So it increased reimbursement rates to schools for the school meal programs, making them hopefully more widely accessible and available. It also included incentive payments to states that are able to streamline enrollment processes to try to make it the administration of those programs more efficient so that more families are able to access those programs. Catherine highlighted the after-school meals program, which was a critical win. This is a program that had been piloted in states and is now available in all 50 states so that kids can receive a nutritious meal in after-school programs. It also established for the first time nutrition standards for all food served in schools so that we're sure that we're not just providing kids much-needed calories and nutrition, but also making sure that they're getting whole grains and low-sodium foods and low-fat milks and fresh fruits and vegetables, things that ensure healthy development as well.
And so this is an increase in federal money coming to Colorado.
It is. One of the challenges that we face, obviously, is as Congress debates our current debt ceiling and looks to make cuts in other program areas, we worry that the great wins secured through the Healthy Hunger Free Kids Act last year could really be offset by cuts in other programs. And so we're all fighting hard to make sure that as Congress considers where to take cuts, that they're not going after the most vulnerable, those who rely on these nutrition programs just to find basic needs or to meet basic needs for their families.
And where does the state money come into play?
Most of these food programs are fully federally financed. The state, in some cases, pays a small administrative portion of the fees, but really, in most of these cases, these are state are federally funded programs.
And that's
This is Ann Bennett. One of the things that I think is important to realize, though, is that even though they're federally funded, they often bring a lot of money into the state. They employ quite a few people and they feed quite a few people. And for example, WIC last year, food costs were about close to $19 million that came into the three counties that we serve alone. So, you know, it really serves a lot more people than just the WIC population if you look at it in the way that the funding is.
And that's exactly what I was going to say. The SNAP program in particular brings federal money that's then spent on the local level in our local grocery stores, our local markets. And it's also true for the child nutrition programs. That these are programs where they're purchasing the food here in Colorado. And that's really a great thing for the state on a number of levels, particularly economic development. The SNAP program, it's estimated that for every dollar in SNAP benefits actually generates $1.85 in economic activity between making other purchases, transportation, and all the sort of associated costs of using SNAP. So there's a lot of benefits of the nutrition programs.
We're at 303-442-4242 if you'd like to join our conversation this morning about childhood nutrition and the policies and the funding in Colorado. The reason I raised the state funding issue is some listeners may recall during the last legislative session, there was a move to eliminate the state's contribution to the school breakfast program, I believe, and then this was later restored. So the state does have some money that is kicked in for these programs?
For the breakfast program, the state of Colorado, quite wisely decided to eliminate the reduced price category and cover that copay that usually would go to low-income families that are eligible for WIC but not for food stamps in some regards. They're between 130 and 185% of the poverty line. And this is great for those families, but also just really makes the program more efficient for schools to only have to have some paid students and some free students. And so that funding has been restored, and we're thrilled to report that. But that was a legislative decision that the state made to improve the program.
And at the federal level, are there certain standards that are enforced with local school districts to say, like, you can't get this money unless you promise you're not going to have sodas or very sugary foods in the lunch line, et cetera?
Well, yes. The meals that are served through the National School Lunch Program, the School Breakfast Program, summer food, all meet nutrition standards. So they all meet federal nutrition standards, which, as Cody mentioned, have become stricter with this new law. Soda and things like that are sold in schools are known as competitive foods. They're sold outside of the school meal program.
In the vending machine in the hallway or something.
Right. And there are laws that govern when those foods are sold. They can't be sold during lunch hour, for example. The machines actually have to shut off. But a lot of the decisions around competitive foods have been left to the local level to decide what's appropriate to sell, what's appropriate to offer. And some schools have decided not to offer any competitive foods, not to get rid of vending machines altogether, and some haven't.
And it is important to note that Colorado did take steps to restrict access to sugar-sweetened beverages in vending machines in our schools in 2008. The legislature passed a law, and the State Board of Education promulgated regulations restricting access to those sugar-sweetened beverages. So that is a good step forward for Colorado in ensuring or at least limiting access to the sugar-sweetened beverages in schools.
And does the healthier – oh, go ahead, Ann Bennett from Tri-County Health. Go ahead.
Yeah, one of the exciting things that we were able to do this year with the Communities Putting Prevention to Work grant is to work with 15 school districts in our area to change policy around what kinds of foods are offered for parties, for celebrations, for rewards in schools, to try to get away from the cupcakes and that type of thing. And there have also been efforts to improve the food in the cafeterias, and we've worked a lot with the food service directors to promote more fresh fruits and vegetables, whole grains, that type of thing. And on the activity side, there is a really great program that we're going to be promoting more next year, which is the Flat 14ers, where, you know, in Colorado we have 14 thousand-foot mountains, and so rather than having the kids climb the mountains, they can walk around the schoolyard so many times to get so many steps, and by the time they're done, the idea is to climb as many 14ers as possible. So there are some really great programs out there working with the schools to promote wellness and health, and that's one of them.
Does the healthier food in the schools have to be more expensive, or can it be done in a cost-competitive way with the more standard processed fare? Catherine Moose.
There's a lot of sort of different ways that schools provide food, and there's sort of lots of different costs that go into providing healthy meals. One of the really exciting, innovative things going on here in Colorado through a organization called Live Well Colorado and Cook for America are teaching schools how to prepare healthy meals from scratch using fresh produce and all kinds of wonderful ingredients. And they've actually found a way to do it in a very cost-effective way. And that's one of the things I think is so wonderful about their program and what they're teaching, is they actually go into the school and find all kinds of ways to cut costs while improving quality. So I think here in Colorado, through that partnership, there's really a lot of innovative things going on, and Colorado is actually a leader in terms of finding healthy school food for an affordable price. That being said, a lot of small districts do really struggle to provide healthy food, and things like labor costs, things like some of our districts in Colorado are so remote that it's quite difficult to get products delivered in a timely manner, to get enough milk, to get enough fruits and vegetables delivered to these remote areas. There's a lot of different barriers that districts face. So it's certainly not easy, but I do believe it can be done, and that there's a lot of leaders here in Colorado showing people how.
I think another piece of it is probably not only getting the healthier food in the schools, but convincing the kids to eat it and try it. KGNU works with a program called the Integrated Nutrition Education Project, INEP, which does nutrition education in Denver public schools. And, you know, we do our Eat Your Radio project with them in some schools. So, Cody Belsley, can you talk about what role the nutrition education plays in convincing the kids to buy into this idea of eating healthier?
Yeah, absolutely. So the SNAP program, in addition to providing subsidies for the purchase of food products, also includes an education program. And there are a number of different ways that the SNAP Ed program works, one of which is the INEP program that you referenced, where the University of Colorado Denver actually works with elementary school teachers to develop a curriculum and to deliver that curriculum in schools to help teach kids about fruits and vegetables, to make them accessible and fun, to make the preparation of those foods accessible and fun, and to help sort of remove the stigma, if you will, from fruits and vegetables. But it really is a partnership. It needs to happen both in the school and in the home. And so there are also some great SNAP education programs that focus on family education and adult education as well. Ann mentioned her WIC program focuses on tasting cafes, there are culinary boot camps, all sorts of different ways to help parents and teachers make fruits and vegetables accessible and desirable for their little ones.
We're at 303-442-4242. If you'd like to join us with a question or comment about kids and nutrition policy, or if you've had experience with any of the programs we've been talking about, join us at 303-442-4242. How do we know these educational efforts are working? Ann Bennett, do you have any evidence, any data from Tri-County Health that shows that kids are eating healthier, families are eating healthier as a result of these efforts?
We did quite a bit of survey with the gardens and with the tasting cafes, and over 95% of the families tried at least one new food and were eating them afterward. And we did have a little bit less success with the physical activity, but we make homemade type activities for the families to do, milk jug toss with a cut the milk jug off and toss a ball like a catcher's mitt, and over half the families have been active in doing some form of physical activity as a result. Last year in the gardens, we were able to serve about 5,000 servings of fruits and vegetables to families, and they took them home and indicated on the surveys that they ate them. Over 80% of them ate the fruits and vegetables. So it is successful. And I think, as many have pointed out so far, there are many facets of obesity and many facets of child nutrition that have to be taken into account. And families have to be involved for it to be successful. And that's really what a lot of the programs now are working on in the schools, in the WIC program, in the SNAP program, to get families involved. So it's not just the schools trying to feed healthier foods, because they need to eat healthier foods at home as well.
303-442-4242 is our number, 442-4242, if you'd like to join our conversation. Teresa is on the line. Hi, Teresa. You're live on KGNU.
Yeah, hi. Good morning. Well, my question to you is that as far as eating healthy, these fruits and vegetables that you're advocating, as I'm eating at Alexander Dawson School, they say they serve healthy food where my granddaughter goes to. The food didn't taste that great. I shop at Whole Foods. I never liked to eat fruits and vegetables until after I started shopping at Whole Foods. And since the fruits and the vegetables you're talking about, as long as it does not taste as delicious as the fruits and vegetables you get at Whole Foods, that's so juicy and so delicious. How do you expect kids or people to be able to enjoy these fruits and vegetables? It's my question to you guys over there.
Well, thank you, Teresa, for your question. We're at 303-442-4242. I'll let anybody jump in, but I think Teresa's saying it's got to taste good to get the kids to eat it.
And I would certainly agree with you. The way, as an anti-hunger advocate, that I think about food quality in schools is really a holistic thing. So the quality of the food, it's important that it's nutritious, it's important that it's fresh. It's also important that it's appealing, that it looks good, that it tastes good. It's also important that kids feel good about eating it, that they feel safe, that they're eating in a dignified environment. So your point is well taken. I think that the quality of school meals is really takes in a lot of factors, including how the food tastes.
And I think, as Catherine mentioned before, our partners at Live Well Colorado are doing some great things to work with school food directors to help them develop strategies for preparing fruits and vegetables in a way that is really appealing, so that those fruits and vegetables become the food of choice and not sort of the food of last resort, if you will. And I think the innovative programs that Live Well is running and the things that our school food service directors are doing to really innovate and and improve the quality of our school meals is something to be applauded, something to learn from, and something to replicate across Colorado.
Let's take a couple more calls. Carol, you're on KGNU. Hi. Carol? Well, I guess Carol
Hello?
Has left us. Oh, yeah. Hi, Carol. It's you. It's your turn. You're live on the air.
Oh, okay. In listening to the conversation, you say how you're both women are saying how they're trying to promote healthy eating in the schools. Like with Tri-County Health, I'm interested in the fact that you're having growing vegetables. Are you doing it organically?
Yes. We actually have a master gardener on staff who is working with the families, and we use compost and no pesticides, that sort of thing. It's been a really positive experience to teach people how to make compost, how to garden, rotating plants, that sort of thing is really valuable for families to learn. And the foods that come out of the garden have been really excellent and pesticide-free. Sorry, I got my tongue tangled.
And then also in the schools, are you promoting organic fruits and vegetables? Because children at an early age, if they're exposed to pesticides, how are they going to grow up to be healthy? So are you going to fight against Monsanto and not have conventional foods that are so dangerous for children to eat, which show that they don't promote any healthy benefits later on in life? And if you want children to be healthy and have lower medical costs going forward in their lives, are you just going to go with organic and over conventional?
Thanks for your call, Carol.
I'm sorry. The American Dietetic Association actually is quite a movement through one of the practice groups working on that very issue right now. And there's been a bill in Congress that's been addressing that, and I don't know where that stands, but that certainly is an issue that we are looking at, that all of the nutrition community is looking at, and I don't think that we're going to solve that matter overnight.
Well, if people can go to, you say how people, if they're on food stamps, they can go and use their food stamps to buy organic vegetables, then why aren't you promoting more organic? Why aren't you promoting organic and fruits, organic fruits and vegetables in the schools so the children are exposed to it? Because if you look at it, cost for cost, a lot of the items that in the supermarkets are equal to the cost for organic as it is to conventional, and sometimes it's even cheaper to just buy organic. And it is cheaper in the long run if you do go organic over conventional. And
right, and I don't know that the schools aren't doing that. I'm guessing that many of them are using as much organic as possible, and, you know, I can't really address that. Do the rest of you know?
Yeah, I can say that a number of schools in Colorado are working really, really hard to provide fresh local produce that's organic. I know that in Colorado Springs, District 11, it's really going above and beyond in the quality of their food, and organic is something that they care deeply about. I think for some districts it is still a challenge to provide all of these foods at a cost-effective way, but I know that a lot of the districts in Colorado are working as hard as they can to make these changes.
I have one further question.
Yeah,
for the two women that are on. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Hi, Carol. You're still on.
Okay. For the two women that are on today, which do you eat? Do you eat conventional or you eat do you eat in your households? Do you give your children conventional or organic produce and vegetables?
Okay. Well, I guess Carol has asked how we eat. I'll weigh in. I eat sometimes organic and sometimes conventional. Anybody else want to take that?
Sure. This is Cody, and you know, I as well, like Sam, eat a mix of both conventional and organic produce.
Okay. Thanks for your call, Carol.
Okay,
we're
going to
hear
you.
From we're going to hear from Mark now. Hello, Mark. You're next.
Hello. I missed the first few minutes of the program, so I don't know whether this has been discussed, but I think one of the most compelling arguments for these types of food programs are really the economic benefits as well as the long-term health benefits of families, children and families being healthy over time, and the kind of long-term beneficial effects that has on our society and the economy, in that for every dollar spent, there are a number of dollars in savings off into the future. Do any of you have any information about that that would help kind of make that point?
Yeah, in the WIC program, for every dollar that is spent in the WIC program, it saves between $2 and $4 in Medicaid costs, and that has been shown nationally in several different studies.
Okay, and that's in addition then to the just the general salutary effect of having healthier children, healthier families, and kind of families learning to eat better, which has a multi-generational effect.
Yes.
Yeah.
And Catherine Moose, okay. Something to add to that?
Oh,
thanks, Mark.
Mark, I wanted to thank you for that comment. I think it's a really important point. And there's actually a study that came out of Brandeis University a few years ago that shows that, but actually shows it in the negative way. They look at all the costs of hunger in the United States, and I'm sure you can find it online. I'm can't remember the names of the authors, but it talks about the healthcare costs, the economic costs, the labor costs of having a workforce and a child population that doesn't have enough nutritious food or doesn't have access to enough nutritious food. So I very much appreciate your comment.
Well, and just to add to that, as Catherine mentioned earlier, for every dollar invested in SNAP, the food stamps program, it generates $1.85 in local economic activity. So as Denver and Colorado think about ways to recover from the Great Recession and places to make investments in economic development, participation in the SNAP program and increasing Colorado's participation in the SNAP program is actually a great strategy to help with economic recovery. One study has shown that the city and county of Denver alone is leaving over $35 million in economic activity on the table every year just due to its low participation rate in the SNAP program. So as Mayor-elect Hancock and the new city council think about ways to help Denver recover, increasing SNAP participation is actually a great economic development strategy.
And this may be a little out of your particular areas of expertise, but are there links, formal links between local agriculture and school lunch, for example, go from the farm to the school to the lunch table? That is probably encouraged generally, but are there any formal policies in any districts you're aware of to buy local?
A lot of districts are working really hard to buy local, and a lot of I know that the Colorado Department of Agriculture is working with the school districts on farm to school and a lot of these great projects, including school gardens, which is a bit different than farm to school. I'm not aware of any official policies, but I think that, oh, Cody might be, but I do know that it is a practice.
In 2010, the Colorado legislature established a Food Systems Advisory Council, which is a state-level commission to look at food systems, and it includes farm-to-school initiatives. Especially in our rural communities, the San Luis Valley, the Eastern Plains, there are a lot of great opportunities to capitalize on the strong and robust agricultural resources in those communities and to link those resources to their schools. And so there is a state-level commission underway to look at how to improve those connections between our agriculture industry and our schools in Colorado.
And
it's worth noting,
we also are doing a program called Harvest of the Month. And, you know, one of the problems with farm to school is just the school year is during the fall and winter for the most part, and spring when there's not so much produce and so on available. But we are going to be working with all the USD programs and the schools to promote Harvest of the Month, which is highlighting a certain Colorado-grown product so that we can use it in all the programs and highlight the nutrition connection with it.
And Ann Bennett, as we reach the end of our program, I wanted to give you a chance to give some contact information for listeners in the Tri-County region, Adams, Arapaho, and Douglas counties. If they're interested in accessing your services, what's the best way for them to do that?
They can go to our website, which is www.tchd.org. Tri-County Health Department are what the letters stand for. They're welcome to call the health department at 303-220-9200, and they should be able to get some help there.
All right. Ann Bennett is director of WIC and Nutrition Services with Tri-County Health, Adams, Arapaho, and Douglas counties. Their number again is 303-220-9200. Ann, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
And Cody Belsley, who is with the Colorado Children's Campaign, she's vice president for health initiatives. The bigger picture here is, as you said at the top of the show, the need is growing, and yet government revenues are either reduced or flat. Obviously, this is a collision course and has strained every level of government. A big problem. What's the solution?
If I knew that, I would be a rich woman and not sitting here. But I think the solution really, not to be flip, the solution is engagement, is ensuring that everyone who's listening today contacts their lawmaker and expresses their belief in the importance of these programs and safety net services that help our most vulnerable residents, including our families and our kids. Our website, coloradokids.org, is a great way to keep an eye on what's happening at policy at the local, state, and federal level, and to make your voice heard and get involved on behalf of Colorado's kids and families.
And finally, Catherine Moose from Hunger Free Colorado. I want to give you a chance to give your contact information, but also if you have thoughts on this bigger picture question, where we have a growing need, poverty increasing rapidly, childhood obesity increasing rapidly in Colorado, and seemingly not enough money to adequately address the problem. What do we do?
Well, I think there's a few different ways to respond to that question. First, I think on the state level, we all need to continue to work with our local governments and our state government to ensure that the programs that we do have are being implemented as effectively and efficiently as possible to serve everyone who is eligible for these programs. So I think here in Colorado, we need to keep rolling up our sleeves, which folks have been doing diligently for a long time. And then I would echo what Cody says. I think that it's important for all the citizens of Colorado to stay engaged and not hesitate to call our elected officials and weigh in on these very serious budget decisions that are being made. And our website, also hungerfreecolorado.org, there's a way to sign up for our alerts and information. We really only send out political alerts when they are very crucial to the well-being of children and families in Colorado. So I would encourage everyone to do that, and also Children's Campaign.
Is there anything on your radar right now as far as political action that you're organizing your supporters around?
We are monitoring the budget conversations very closely, because we fear that there's a lot to be lost, particularly in programs that impact low-income families and low-income children. So it's something that we are really going to try to rally everyone's support around, protecting these programs, which have proven to be so effective and so necessary for our families in Colorado.
And what's the best way for people to reach Hunger Free Colorado?
To reach Hunger Free Colorado, the best way, besides our website, hungerfreecolorado.org, feel free to email us at info@hungerfreecolorado.org or give us a call, 720-328-1284. And we'd be happy to field any questions. That includes questions about food resources. You can call us in Metro Denver or statewide toll-free, 855-855-4626. And we can answer really any question about federal nutrition programs and also food pantries and food banks and those kinds of resources.
Catherine Moose is the Child Nutrition Program Manager with Hunger Free Colorado. If you missed any of the contact information our guests gave, call us at the station. We'd be happy to pass it on to you. We're at 303-449-4885. This is part of our ongoing Eat Your Radio series on child nutrition. You'll be hearing from kids, you'll be hearing from parents, from policymakers, teachers, as we continue to look at how to get kids and their families eating healthier in Colorado.